Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 1:20 p.m. that is Pacific Standard Time. Today is January 23rd. Chinese banks pulled back rather sharply in here today, and it does definitely look like it's encountering resistance around the 16,000 level, and it's been ranging below this level for the last 5 years. So it's going to have to bounce and bounce meaningfully in order to really demonstrate that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. Now, there are a couple of different points about China. The one that's making headlines is the coronavirus. And there were some instances where people were not exhibiting a high temperature and yet died of the disease. So that is obviously a complicating factor in quarantining people and trying to maintain an orderly environment. The city of Wuhan has been shut down. There are about 11 million people live there. So it's obviously a rather momentous task to maintain a quarantine on the city. But there is, I think it's evidence at least, that the Chinese are taking the entire episode very seriously. And the WHO said today that they are not going to say that it is a global phenomenon, but rather a local Chinese phenomenon for the moment. So that's positive. But the bigger picture here is not so much about the coronavirus. This is obviously something that people are worried about. And one, I think, important point about the coronavirus is that it is substantially less lethal than either SARS or MERS. And we should remember that the Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome that came out in 2012 was considerably more deadly than the SARS epidemic, but it died down quickly because of containment measures that were introduced quickly. And there is the potential that that's what's going to happen with this coronavirus as well, and it is substantially less lethal than either of those two other instances. What's more important in China is liquidity and access to liquidity, particularly for the regional banking sector. And the banking sector generally, as a function of or an arm of the wider Communist Party, is under pressure because of the absence of clear stimulative measures. Chinese growth is slowing. There is a problem in terms of the non-performing loans, particularly in the regional banks. This is not a problem that is going to get better on its own. It is going to require a clear and substantive solution-oriented policy from the central government, which has been slow in forthcoming. So that, I think, is the biggest risk with China, but it's a well understood risk at the same time. Now, then when we think about, well, what are the other things that people are worried about in here? Well, if it's China or the coronavirus, those are two potential items. People are also worried about liquidity. What is interesting is the size of the Fed's balance sheet was supposed to be updated yesterday. It hasn't been updated yet, but it is still increasing. The Fed panicked when the repo market seized up in September. They've added in about $400 billion worth of liquidity. That is a little bit more than half of the liquidity that's been added into the market since October. Now, when we aggregate the balance sheets of all the central banks in the world, or at least the larger ones, and then redenominated into dollars, then the total increase has been much closer to about $750 billion, and it's pausing now around the round 20 trillion mark. Obviously, if the Federal Reserve decides that they've added enough money into the market, then this clear correlation between the continued advance on the S&P 500 and the lack of volatility is going to at least be challenged. There's been a lot of talk about the low level of the VIX. It is, I think, worth remembering, however, that the VIX was trading at well below 10 for a good portion of 2017, which was the last period where we had a very inert period of volatility. Well, we had the big pop on the upside in 2018, right at the beginning of the year. I think it's very it's really worth remembering that the pullback in early 2018 was about 10%. The pullback in late 2018 was about 20%, and yet volatility did not spike nearly as high. One of the reasons why volatility spiked in 2018 was because it was coming off such incredibly low levels, and the short VIX trade was rapidly getting unwound, and that created a spike in volatility. There is the potential here that with interest rates starting to come back down, then there is the scope for volatility to in fact go back down towards the 10 level. The other point, of course, in monitoring volatility is that peaks are much better indicators of market bottoms than lows are of market tops. So thinking about the low volatility measures and trying to extrapolate that into the imminence of a significant stock market pullback is usually a wasted time, because volatility can stay low for prolonged periods of time, and particularly in a liquidity-rich environment. Therefore, it is the continued availability of liquidity from the Federal Reserve is going to be the primary arbiter of demand. And when we look at, for example, the Dow Jones Industrials Average, it was well off its lows in here today, and it has been boosted by Boeing, which was off its lows as well. Boeing has got Type 3 top formation characteristics, and it has at least steadied from the $300 area, and that represents the lows put in at the end of 2018. And there is a short-term oversold condition relative to the trend mean, so we could potentially get some steadying in here right now. Part of the reason why it has bounced in here today is because the company has said that they are going to restart production of the 737 MAX in the first quarter ahead of their expected date for recertification, which they hope will be sometime in June or July. The FAA has said they don't have a date in mind. But the bigger point here is that a substantial number of Boeing's suppliers are in rather dire financial straits. And when we look at the list in a tabular form and then sort by market cap, well, it's easy to see that we have companies that are very large but don't really depend on Boeing for a lot of their revenue. But the other side of the equation is that there are some very small companies that provide avionics, which are heavily dependent on Boeing for their income. And they may not be able to survive beyond the quarter if Boeing is no longer requiring their services. There, if we think about it, that there are hundreds of companies that depend on Boeing for business, and a lot of them have got a market cap of less than a couple of billion. And then when you think about, for example, Kaiser Aluminium or Lissy, and Boeing represents 15% of their revenue, well, they're not very big companies to begin with. And when we start to think about the fact that when your biggest customer no longer needs you, then that is going to translate into layoffs. And Boeing has so far resisted the temptation to lay people off, but it is a significant risk. I think if we're going to think about what the risks are in the market, then Boeing represents a significant risk, and it really does need to hold the $300 area. If it fails there, then with a Type 3 top formation and ranges being explosions waiting to happen, it could quite easily unwind all of the advance put in between 2016 and 2018, and that would represent very significant layoffs both within Boeing itself and in Boeing's ecosystem. And Boeing pays well, and the kinds of companies that rely on it for their business also tend to pay well. These, I think, is something that could have a really quite significant deleterious effect on the US economy. So, if we're going to monitor anything on the bear side, then it has to be some of these big industrial companies. The problem is that the kinds of issues that pierced the veil of solidity for a company like General Electric are potentially visible in other big industrial companies as well. The hollowing out of General Electric's industrial base through the financialization of the shareholder base was something that went on over years and contributed to the complete demise of the share. Now it is starting to turn around now, but it is a shade of where it used to be, and the likelihood of it getting back up towards the $55 area at any point in the next decade does look to be really rather difficult to achieve. We've seen the writing off of goodwill in a substantial number of companies, and Kraft Heinz would be another good example, where the share went from 100 to about 25, and now it is in the process of putting in a base. So this writing off of goodwill is something that could have a significant effect on a number of these big companies, and I think Boeing is probably going to be the lightning rod for the sector. But against the things that people are worried about, it is important to pay attention to the fact that ranges are explosions waiting to happen. The most recent of these ranges, which lasted 2 years on Wall Street, has been completed. The breakout persists, and the sequence of higher reaction lows remains very much intact. There have been a series of small ranges, one above another, and the last of those was right at the end of the year. We may now be in the next one of those. As long as this sequence of ranging and trending remains intact and is supported by continued availability of liquidity, then we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. We looked at the Dow Jones earlier, and the transportation average is coming back up towards the highs put in 2 weeks ago. There was a small upside key reversal in here today. It has now bounced from the upper side of the underlying range, and this is about as positive action as one could hope for in the short term, but it does rather suggest that we are at the point where we could see the transportation index starting to reconfirm on the upside, and that would then create a Dow theory buy signal. Or at least it would confirm the recovery in the industrials. Then, when we look at the smaller cap sector, well, the Russell 2000 is in the region of the peak put in 2018. It has clearly broken higher over the course of the last 6 weeks, and it was well off its lows in here today. When we then think about what's going on in Europe, I think there is a continued upward bias. The fact that the Russell 2000 is doing better, that mid caps generally are doing better, and that there is I think an increasingly solid argument that we've seen the trough in global growth, that should be positive for Europe generally. The Euro Stoxx index has completed a very lengthy range, and that's particularly visible on the decade-long trend. 450 points represents the peaks for the Euro Stoxx index. When we look at the Europe Stoxx index, it's been going sideways for 20 years and has now broken on the upside. And when indices break out on the upside following these extraordinarily long ranges, it's generally a signal that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. The FTSE 100 is a very significant weight in that index, but it is pausing here in the region of the upper side of its first step above the base. But I still think that that's all it is, that it is just some consolidation in the region of the upper side of this long-term base formation, and that there is ample scope for additional upside. When we look at the pound, it bounced yesterday from around the 130 area, and I think when we look at it over the weekly, on the weekly chart, this does look like a bullish consolidation in the region of 130, and that we are likely to see additional upside by the pound over the course of the next few months. When we then think about what's going on in Australia, the ASX 200 has been resurgent over the last 3 weeks and since the beginning of the year. It was in negative territory in here today, but not in an especially dynamic manner. There is a short-term overbought condition, and there is the potential that it's going to be unwound. The strong likelihood is that if we are in the, or we've seen the trough in global growth, and we're back in a liquidity-fueled environment, there is the clear potential that growth is going to pick up, earnings will get better, and we're going to see a further leg higher in the stock market. That is really right in line with the longer term cycle. The US presidential cycle suggests that we would get the best year in the 4 year cycle in the fourth year. This is the fourth year. The worst year is the first year, so I think it's reasonable to expect that 2021 is not going to be a great year for stock markets. But that suggests that the surprises are probably going to be on the upside in 2020. The yield curve inversion back in August supports that hypothesis. Generally speaking, after an inversion, the stock market goes up because central banks get a shock and they move aggressively to try and support the market, and that contributes to the stock market popping on the upside. In 1995 through 1998, it went up 50%. Between 2006, or late 2005, and 2007, it went up 30%. And since August, the market's up about 15%. So that tells us that we're still very much in line for surprises on the upside. The thing to be particularly, I think, cautious about is if the yield curve spread in fact breaks back above its trend mean, and most particularly if it does so in a dynamic manner. We certainly had a failed signal in approximately 1998, but the spread came all the way back down. It was really back in 2001 when the yield curve was really surging higher, or in 2007. These were the clear indications that something really quite deleterious was likely for the stock market because of the recession risk. And we're just not there yet. The yield curve spread is around 22 basis points, and it is not surging higher, and it has still got a long way to go before it breaks back above its trend mean. And what that suggests is that we're still in this liquidity-fueled environment. Now, if we look at some of the shares that have been accelerating most aggressively, well, Tesla was in positive territory very barely in here today, and following a weak open, it was able to recoup most of the loss. Apple was at a new high in here today and continues to extend its advance. Microsoft, which has also been resurgent, has also been was in positive territory today, but off its high for the day. Then, when we look at some of the consumer staples sector, I think it is worth considering that consumer staples have been doing tolerably well. They have been underperforming the wider market, but they are still rising. We are also starting to see some interest coming back into the tobacco shares, and the performance of these kinds of defensive sectors is representative of some bargain hunting going on in the latter stages of a big bull market. What I find particularly interesting, however, is the renewed interest, or new interest really, in the hydrogen sector. And for example, Ceres Power has popped on the upside over the course of the last few weeks. Now we're looking at, I think, probably some consolidation for the sector. And then we have the resurgence in interest in the lithium miners, and a number have broken their downtrends over just the last couple of weeks. What this is, I think, evidence of is that the virtue signaling that politicians have engaged in is translating into real policy, and there is the likelihood of more cap and trade agreements or emissions trading, tighter emissions regulations, and a greater desire to support a battery or a hydrogen-based transportation sector. So that is likely to drive demand for lithium and drive demand for hydrogen. And these are rather depressed sectors, so they are also rallying rather meaningfully. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.